Hello, six pack of confidence. Been so many nights since we first met. Glad to see you brought all your friends for another night of Plastic Cup Politics.
How's it going, folks out there in podcast land? Welcome to a new episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. I'm your host, Mark LaRue. He is Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD. That PhD is in political science, but he's currently working as an engineer in the finance and travel industry. Security engineer, something like that.
Information security engineer. Close enough.
Yeah. You know, I figure this is the 60th show. I should get this shit down at some point in time, but I'm not paid enough to think about it that hard. This is Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. This is an Arizona-based podcast based around drinking or changing your mood mentally with substances and politics.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We have a good time. However you found us, you can subscribe there to listen to more of us. And you can also interact with the show at Plastic Cup Pod on all your favorite social media sites. I want to get this out right here at the beginning. It is August 20th when we are recording the show. Part of the show where I say, Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, how you doing and what are you having?
I'm doing well. Super busy. Tonight, I'm drinking something special that I believe came from a reader or a listener recommendation. Tonight, I am drinking a distilled non-alcoholic cocktail from Seed Lip. It's Spice 94 Aromatique, and I made myself an herbal gin and tonic. So it's got maybe 3 or 4 fingers of the Seed Lip, and then I've got 90 milligrams of THC in here, Baked Brothers unflavored syrup. And then I filled it the rest of the way with tonic and a squeeze of lemon and then topped it with ice. And it's fucking amazing, man. It's not quite like gin, right? Because it's not as sort of pungent at the back of the throat. It doesn't have that whoop that gin has, right? But it has a lot of the juniper in it. And it definitely feels like you're drinking a cocktail. And, of course, the 90 milligrams of THC will hit like a fucking hammer.
There you go, Reggie. Reggie, yeah, one of our listeners was asking about that. He said he wanted to hear a review. Guess what, Reggie? There's your review. How you like that?
Plastic Cup Politics approved.
I am drinking Fossil Creek from that brewery. Nice, light, Arizona-style IPA. 4.2% IPA, because sometimes when in Arizona, you don't want to be drinking a 7% IPA.
No. Because it's hot.
So we're going to try to go ahead and fire right through this show. Last one went a bit long. We're going to talk about guns. We're going to talk about the economy. We're going to talk about Israel. And we're going to talk about LGBTQI rights. I think I saw an I in this article at the end.
Yeah, I saw too. That's, I'm a supporter in all sorts of ways, man. But the acronym's getting out of control. At some point, we're going to need to find a word to stand in for all of these groups. It's that kind of repackaging you need to do for that Midwest mentality, right? You expect them to rattle off too many letters in association with your group, and you're going to lose them.
You're going back to that three-letter word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we will get there as well. Well, I mean, we aren't going to get to using the three-letter word. I don't think we're going to do that on this show. I do oftentimes forget to click the that we use foul language on this show. Sorry, we use foul language on this show. We don't usually use the three-letter F word. We're big fans of the four-letter one, which is something we want to scream out sometimes when we're talking about guns. As was expected, Donald Trump, who came out saying that he was all for background checks, has now backed all the way away, and it's now a mental issue thing completely, and because guns don't pull the trigger. It's the same shit we talked about last week and what we were expecting last week.
What's even more hilarious about it, right, is that, like, the president's schedule isn't a mystery. So everyone knew that right before these tweets started coming out, he had a call with Wayne LaPierre. So he gets on the phone with the head of the NRA, and then immediately starts tweeting not just about walking back his previous promises about gun control, but trying to turn it to his electoral advantage by talking about the dirty things Democrats are going to do about your guns. Yeah, this isn't a surprise to anyone. And what's even better about it is that this time, Because what happened last time was the NRA called him up and said, look, our 35 million supporters will cut your nuts off. And he went, oh, fuck, tell me what to say. So this time the NRA called him up and went, our 35 million supporters will cut your nuts off. And Trump should have said, actually, polling numbers show that most of your supporters favor background checks. And then hung up.
Yeah, but let's, I don't think that Donald Trump should be the one at this point in time pointing out how he thinks that polls are accurate.
Yeah, no. I'm not expecting that he ever would do that or would even be capable of doing that. I'm suggesting that that's what a mature adult who was analyzing his electoral prospects in 2020 should have done. Right? This time, the NRA is wrong. Last time they were right. Right? It's very well. It's very likely they could have sunk his presidency, right, with their voting base. But it's not. The strength isn't there anymore. The tide has turned so firmly, even amongst hardcore Republicans, that it's just undeniable at this point. The NRA is fighting against their own members.
That's what I was about to say. As of, like, in the past 2 days, three of the top-level members have quit.
Yeah. Like, their own membership is telling them, you people have become terrorist supporters. We don't want what you're selling anymore. Stop it. Stop saying these things in our name. We want background checks. We're okay with that. There's nothing wrong with it. Right? When a majority of the NRA's own membership supports background checks, they are on the wrong side of history. And in 2020, they're going to lead Donald Trump to the wrong side of the ballot box.
I got in a nice little discussion on Facebook with a couple Gosser supporters. Go figure. And the thing is that they are so polar, like anything that I say, they want to fight, and they don't understand that I am one of them. I am a gun person. It's just, I want to keep being a gun person. And I think that's the way that most of the members that are still members of the NRA are more like me of, we need to prevent this because we can see on the horizon, New Zealand or an Australia or something where there is a mandatory buyback. Mm-hmm. And I want to stop it before that. And it's so irritating when you're like, I'm a gun person. You're a gun person. Like, we should be able to figure this out. And they just, and then you hit them with like facts and stuff like that and ask them what their solution would be. And then you just don't hear anything anymore. It's so weird how when you attack people with facts, that they don't usually have a response.
Yeah, well, we don't really live in a fact-based society anymore. But you know what? It's not even a fact-based society. It's a fact-based reality we're missing. I sent you an article earlier today that I will hopefully get in and put up on Facebook so everyone else can see it. So in 2014, Peter Pomerantsev, British journalist, born in the Soviet Union, published a book called Nothing is True and Everything is Possible, right? So it's a talk about how in the modern era, using techniques that were originally cultivated by the KGB and that have since been refined by its successor agencies, the Russian government actively worked to destabilize its own society's reliance upon facts. It worked to create a society in which nothing could be said to bear the value of truth. Everything is an interpretation. Everything is manipulable, right? And you are encouraged to pick your own preferred set of facts, especially if those preferred set of facts happen to align with the Kremlin or an affiliate or an allied agency, right? So Pomerantsev then comes back with a new book called This Is Not Propaganda, Adventures in the War Against Reality. And it's a discussion about how, so you had the Soviet Union and the United States, right, during the Cold War, they both worked to weaponize information. It was one of our primary weapons that we used against one another. Sometimes in in, you know, sort of enlightened and even in some ways beneficial ways, right? So we opened libraries essentially in Eastern Bloc and former Eastern Bloc countries that were filled with classics of Western philosophy that had been translated into the local language, right? And the idea is to provide the intellectual toolkit to lead a sort of democratic revolution, blah, blah, blah. Don't know how effective any of that ever was, but it's an interesting way to try and beneficially weaponize information. Most of the time, we weren't doing it in a beneficial way. Then Putin comes along, and he and the successors to the KGB then try to further weaponize information by destabilizing the very foundations of an Enlightenment society. And then Twitter and Facebook happen. And you take this Russian toolkit for destabilizing reality by creating a situation where nothing can ultimately be accepted as true, right? Everything can be faked, and you've seen it be faked in some circumstances, so why wouldn't you believe me when I tell you it's fake now, right? And it allowed them to amplify that around the world. So now they weren't just baffling their own people with bullshit. They were spreading that destabilization of reality far and wide, and they found plenty of willing accomplices in people like Donald Trump, who is, let's face it, too stupid to realize that he's actually being their accomplice. But he is, as we've said on the show before, he has the kind of low cunning, right, to be a very effective con man, and that's exactly what a project like this needs in a position of power. And then you found... they also found allies in a bunch of dyed-in-the-wool fascists around the world, like Shinzo Abe in Japan and Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel, who we'll come back to in a little while. And then they found a bunch of Eastern European fascists. And then they found a bunch of fascists in the UK who were very sympathetic and led a little movement called Brexit, right? This kind of anti-reality, right, lends itself very well to fascist politics. It's in fact at the core of fascism. It's one of the points behind some of our classic books about totalitarianism and fascism, like 1984 and Animal Farm. It's the whole idea of being able to rob truth, the idea of truth, of its value.
2 and 2 equal 5?
Yes. 2 and 2 equal 5. So what's the point? What's the as a friend of mine likes to say, you always end with a cookie, right? So what's the upshot? What does this mean now that we understand what's happening, what's being done to us? It means that to some extent, a lot of the politics of our day and age are a red herring. They're a sideshow. Right. We still need to do something about it. We still clearly have a fascist and a criminal in the White House. He needs to be removed either by impeachment or at the ballot box. So we definitely don't need to take our foot off the gas in terms of the upcoming presidential election. But we need to understand that it needs to be placed in its proper perspective. And this is going to be difficult for me to say and for many of our listeners to accept. But Donald Trump and his administration have started to do the right thing for the wrong reasons. There's a bipartisan coalition of states' attorneys general who have also started to do that same right thing, but they're doing it for the right reason. So both those attorneys general and the federal government have initiated antitrust investigations of Facebook and Google and Apple and Twitter in an effort to determine, A, are they engaging in unfair business practices that are eliminating competition from the marketplace? And B, even though I'm not, like, the legal foundation for the government to intervene, even if they determined this to be the case, is kind of shaky. But is there sheer size and their monolithic nature, does it make them too dangerous to allow them to continue to have control over the marketplace of ideas to the extent that such a marketplace continues to exist in this day and age, right? Under these, in an atmosphere of anti-reality.
See, Google should be sued for giving Hillary Clinton 2.6 to 16 million votes in the last election.
Oh, God damn it. See, I told you it was going to be hard for me to say. No, they shouldn't be sued for that.
They because should be sued
because they have a monopoly on search, right?
Yes, yes.
And that's bad for two reasons. One, it really is the case that if we had other companies out there that were competitive in the search marketplace, we might see a more rapid advancement. Right. Let's face it. Google search technology has plateaued in part because the company has moved on to other things, but also in part because they don't need to. What the fuck do they need to improve it for? They don't have any. Who are you going to go to? Bing? Really? It's a miracle that that service even stays online. The only reason it's there is because Microsoft forces it into all sorts of its products.
But you can still ask Jeeves.
So anyway, I think that if that exists, it's probably owned by Google. There's the stifling innovation angle, and that's real. There's good data to support that that is the case, right? When companies lack competition, they cease innovating because they don't need to. What are you going to do? You can't go anywhere else, right? The other reason we need to take a long, hard look at this is because Google is the one who decides what you're going to see in your top search results. And if it's not on page one, you're not going to give a fuck about it. Statistically, that's the truth, right?
Oh, 100%.
And so Google has the power in many ways to determine reality at this point. Now, do I think they are actively misusing that power? In some cases, yeah. I mean, they've been shown in the past to manipulate search results in their own favor, right? To suppress news that is unfavorable to Google. They've also been shown in the past to have reached cooperative agreements with vicious dictatorships like China. When Google first started, they had their unofficial company motto was don't be evil. And that unofficial company motto, I think, lasted right up until they issued their first their initial price offering. Right. They kicked out their stock options and that don't be evil shit went right out the fucking window.
Evil is a necessary evil in the land of necessary evils.
Yeah. Well, and there's also like we still view a lot of these tech companies through rose colored glasses. Right. We think of them as. I mean, they're amazing. They deliver magic to us, right? The little fucking pocket computers that let us, I mean, like we could talk to somebody on the International Space Station with this stupid ass thing, right? Earlier today, I used my phone to measure the space that my new refrigerator will go into. Right, using an app on my phone and the camera on here and the machine learning that they've packed into this stupid thing that lets it figure out, okay, if the camera is moving at this angle and traveling at this velocity, right, we know that it's actually measuring this distance. And it was within like a third of an inch to being accurate. Yeah. The shine needs to come off. Right? Apple and Microsoft and Google, they're no better than U.S. Steel, Standard Oil. Jeff Bezos is the new J.P. Morgan. Right? Bill Gates, Bill and Melinda Gates are the new Rockefellers. Right? We can't trust these fucking people. They may not be as bad as Donald Trump, but they're on his team, not ours.
Oh, you're saying you can't trust them, but now they know exactly what your kitchen looks like?
Of course they know what my fucking... They know what everything looks like. I carry this goddamn thing around with me. This is... I carry a surveillance device with me everywhere I go. And yeah, I'm smart. You know, I have it configured so that it doesn't collect as much data about me. But fuck it. They still collect enough metadata to tell you everything about me every second of every day. And that is a tremendous amount of power for any single organization or small cadre of organizations to have. So I think it is absolutely imperative that A, We break down the myths around these companies, right? So we need someone to come along and write a people's history of technology in this country so we actually get a real feel for what these companies are actually like. How do they really treat their employees, right? We started to get a little whiff around it, right, when they started talking about what are conditions actually like at Foxconn in China. Why do they have suicide nets around the entire roofline of the factory in China? Oh, maybe it's because circumstances inside are so fucking hellish, employees regularly try to defenestrate themselves. That news story is 10 fucking years old, and I still own an iPhone, and am recording this podcast over an Apple MacBook Air, right? So I'm as guilty as anyone else in continuing to buy the products of a company that does really gross shit. But then again, if you drive a car, you buy the products of a company that does really gross shit.
Even my Prius?
Even your Prius, because it still takes gasoline and it still has a lithium ion battery that required someone to strip rare earth minerals from Central Africa.
Well, it doesn't have that much of the battery life left. It's pretty old.
But what that means, right, if you're a penny-pinching sort, is you're going to go out and get that battery replaced. So they're going to send your current battery to the landfill and replace it with one that required more rare earth minerals to be mined from Central Africa. Right. So even the cars that help us out on the global warming front still present an ethical problem for someone who's trying not to do business with gross people.
And actually, there's a company in Tempe that refurbishes the battery in the car that will get you back up to about 80% life on the battery.
No kidding. Nice.
Yeah, I think it's only like $700 or something like that, so it costs less than a full battery replacement, and it gets you, as Sprint says, it's almost as good.
Almost as good. Oh, holy shit.
We can discuss that as a marketing technique that I don't think really works. This is something that I want to hit real quick about Facebook. I'm going to say don't trust memes. Like, if somebody just only talks in memes, trust your friends that maybe talk to you politically by sharing articles. I mean, trust, you know, check out the source. That was actually really funny. I did have a friend that put up some gun meme, and like right underneath it, Facebook actually put, "This is bullshit."
Yeah.
Like, I'd never seen that before. So I like took a screenshot. I'm like, wow, I've never seen like somebody put up a meme and then Facebook instantly say, "That guy doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about."
Did you send the screenshot to that guy?
Oh, I posted it on the article. I posted it in that.
Facebook says you're fucking lying.
Yeah.
But then again, we just got done talking about how maybe Facebook is actually the liar in this case.
There you go.
Trust. So I kind of fucking doubt it, right? Because memes, you're right, by the way, to not trust memes. Memes are the mental equivalent of herpes, man. Like, they carry really no beneficial value beyond the kind of, like, crude, mean sloganeering that goes into the most base campaigns. And I'm not talking about political campaigns. I'm talking more about like social movements, right? So they provide no benefit, and they are designed to spread like wildfire.
Yeah. And there's usually no more than about 47 words on there, not cited to anything. Nope. And it just, so anyway, don't trust memes. Mm-mm. Can you trust the economy?
Yeah, if you're not a halfwit.
Can you have it both ways? Okay, so let's just go ahead and get into this. The economy's fine. Everything's going to be great. Don't worry about it. Tariffs are... China's paying for all these tariffs. You don't have to worry about that. Okay, we're going to go ahead and hold off on the tariffs till after the Christmas season because it's going to drive up consumer costs. But tariffs are not a tax. We do not pay for the tariffs. We don't pay, but we're going to go ahead and make sure there aren't tariffs until after the Christmas season because we don't want you to have to pay more, but the economy's doing great. We may want to cut payroll taxes a little bit to kind of drive the economy, but everything's wonderful. I mean, if we get this asshole at the Fed, I don't know who appointed him. I appointed him. Anyway, this asshole at the Fed that isn't doing what I want. We need to lower these interest rates, you know, to keep us out of the recession that's not going to happen because the economy's great. Did I cover that?
Yes. So, So here's a little bit of evidence that we don't live, that the quest to produce an anti-reality has not been successful yet. Right. The scrambling, not scrambling, I think we need a better word, floundering, the flailing that you see the president and his team doing at the moment is because they know that this is one of the areas that they themselves, right? Now, remember, these are the same people who have told us over and over and over again that the stock market is the best indicator that the economy is strong. Right? Just look at the stock. They just keep going up, up, up like a rocket, right? It's one of his favorite analogies. Yeah. It's always like a rocket.
So great for all of us that are invested in the stock market.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, but that stuff, it trickles down to you. Yeah, most of it goes to hedge fund managers who I campaigned against, but now love. But some of it trickles down to you, peon. So shut the fuck up. All right. You'll get yours eventually at some point.
He's up, Chris Christie.
Yeah. So the flailing is because they themselves have said that, like, these numbers are irrefutable, right? You have to believe the numbers, and the numbers say the economy is strong and I'm doing great. Suddenly the numbers say the economy is not doing well and is headed definitely towards a recession, and they are hoisted upon their own petard, right? So what can we trust about the economy right now? Requires a tiny bit of background. There are sort of two general schools. One says the economy is a complex enough system now that it has essentially natural cycles that it goes through. The whole thing is unnatural. It's not, you know, and it is a manipulable system if you have enough money to pump into it or pull out of it. But generally speaking, it has natural cycles that can be analyzed and anticipated, but they can't really be interrupted forever. The economy will always proceed in waves. It's just a matter of how long is the wavelength. There's always going to be an up. That up always has to be followed by a down. Then there's another camp that we'll call the camp of magic thinking. And the camp of magic thinking says, if the Federal Reserve just keeps dicking around with interest rates and quantitative easing, and we cut some taxes, we don't ever have to have a recession again. We can continue to manipulate fiscal policy and manipulate the currency and prevent any recession from ever happening again. The economy can be on a gradual upslope indefinitely.
So did they come up with this theory in, like, 2010?
No, that theory's been around a little bit longer than that, but right around, you know... So there's a reason why everyone was so giddy and chose not to look under the covers as the subprime bubble was building from 2000 to 2007. And part of that was because some of these people from the land of magic thinking had risen to power, and they were saying, oh no, we don't have to worry about this stuff. There's not going to be a downside. We're not going to hit a recession. So the bubble in the housing market is largely irrelevant, right? It'll all even out because we're on a perpetual upslope for the rest of time. You know, that was a little bit of it. Mostly it was just like, ha, 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 we're in power now. We're going to take off all the rules so that our friends can make lots of fucking money. And, you know, somebody else will pay the bill down the road. Now, we find that almost our entire government has been captured by people from the land of magic thinking. But the rest of the country, and indeed the world, still lives in the economy is a complex enough animal that it has cycles that we can't put off indefinitely. And the numbers are supporting the economy has cycles camp. So we hit what's called an inverse yield curve, the other day, and that's where the yield on the 10-year Treasury note, which is the long-term T-bill, dropped below that of the yield on the 2-year note, which is the short-term investment, right? That means people are, that cash is leaving the investment space. People are looking for safe places to put their money because they see troubling economic signs on the horizon.
Yeah, that's not the way it's supposed to work. It's supposed to be if you leave your money in the bank longer, you get more money.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And so we see it like that when enough investment money flees quickly, right? When it moves out of the, essentially moves out of the stock market and into government-backed instruments very, very quickly. And it tends to drop that yield much more quickly than it otherwise would have. That indicator has been near perfect for as long as we have kept track. What does that mean? That means that by the end of this year or the beginning of next year, we will be in a recession here in the United States and around the globe. How bad will that recession be? Well, there are some troubling signs. We rebuilt the bubble in the housing market. It's not quite as bad because some of the restrictions on those exotic mortgage instruments or whatever the fuck they called them, securitized mortgage instruments or blah, 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 whatever newspeak they came up with to make what they were doing sound palatable. So it's not quite as unstable, but we still have way more value in the residential housing market than can necessarily be accounted for by the stock that's actually there. So that's got to blow up. But we have a much more troubling one out there. And that is called the student loan debt. Right? We're currently carrying like $2.5 trillion in student loan debt just here in the United States. Let that sink in for a second. $2.5 trillion. And guess who is defaulting on their student loans at record rates? That's right, folks, right here in the good old US of A.
Hey, if you ever wonder why you call me and if I don't know the number, I never answer the phone.
Yeah. Well, and so it's funny. I say it's happening here in the good old US of A. Mostly that's because the vast majority of other industrialized countries, college is either free or nearly free, as long as you qualify to get in. So, yeah, of course it's happening here in the US because the US is one of the only places that has tried to turn their academic infrastructure into a profit-making enterprise. And it has had disastrous effects, both on the university and on the country as a whole. Our university system is far less capable of producing decent scientists and decent science, and it is dramatically less capable of actually educating undergraduate students than it ever has been before. Even at places like ASU, I'm actually a fairly big supporter of a lot of the different reforms that Mike Crow put in place at ASU. But this push to continue to shove as many undergraduates as possible into that university does a disservice to those undergraduates and to the university as a whole. And it's driven by nothing more than wanting to suck in additional tuition money.
Is it kind of the exact same idea with the for-profit prisons? You just want to get as many prisoners in there as possible. It's not that you're trying to get to keep the worst ones or the smartest ones that deserve to be there the most. You still need to, you get paid by the head.
Yeah. And so you, I mean, you still, especially if you're, you know, if you're like a top 25 university, like ASU, you still want to keep the best and brightest too. Right. So you have, that's the other thing. You have separate but unequal systems within the university. Right. The best and brightest get service levels that are up here. Right. For those of you, which would be everyone except Mark, who can't see what I'm doing, my left hand is up very high. Right. And then for the vast majority of undergraduate students, you get service levels that are way down here. Right. My right hand is super low. not only that, but the value of the paper they leave with varies wildly. Part of that, a lot of that actually, the majority of that can be attributed to the fact that not only do they have that piece of paper, but they are the best and brightest, right? So obviously they're going to get more value out of it than someone who isn't. But part of it is also that they get much better guidance on what sort of degree they should pursue, right? Whereas you have huge swaths of 18-year-olds who are just happily admitted to lit programs around the country.
Comm majors. Let's hear it for me.
Sorry, dude. At least you actually had a plan with what you wanted to do with your degree.
And it wasn't sell beer, but I'm down with it.
Yeah, well, fuck it. You know, it doesn't always work out. Like, my plan for my degree wasn't to break into people's computers either, but that's what I do for a living now. Money, money, money. Who do you trust, right? To quote Jack Nicholson from 1985's Tim Burton's Batman.
I thought you were going for the OJs.
So what can you trust about the economy? It's not just a difference of opinion. There is more evidence on one side than the other. So what can you trust? You can trust that we have managed to temporarily defer a recession. So normally they happen at a rate of about every 4 to 5 years, right? You see the economy contract slightly after growing for about 4 or 5 years. We've managed to put one off for about 10 years. Means that the recession that we're about to see is probably going to be a little harsher than a normal recession because it has to contract further to account for the artificial amount of time that we allowed this growth to run. It also will, once it materializes, put the lie, right, to this idea that we can just sort of perpetually go up, up, up like a rocket. So there's a little bit of a benefit to the pain that's around the corner, but you can put your faith in the economy, just not the economy as described by the Trump administration. You can put your faith in the fact that the economy absolutely will contract in the next 12 months.
Is this another look at what I do, not what I say?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? We teased it. We can go ahead and talk about Israel. So two of the new face of the Democratic Party.
Stop. Were trying to... Don't lend credibility to that horse shit, man.
I'm
not even by joking about it.
Okay.
Fuck that guy and that whole thing. That's just such garbage.
Hey, look, we have four new faces. We should say we're going to hang everything on them. Cool.
Yeah.
So Omar and Tlaib were trying to go to Israel and wanted to visit the Palestinian controlled, or not controlled, but the occupied territory. And Trump went on Twitter saying that Israel shouldn't let him. And then Israel came out and said, okay, yeah, we're not going to let you. Here's my question. We give Israel some money, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they're not going to let the people, because Congress holds the purse strings, right? Isn't Congress who controls the money that goes to Israel?
Yep.
If Israel is not going to let the senators in or lawmakers in that are cutting that check, shouldn't we stop cutting those checks if we can't see what we're looking at? And then we can get into whatever the fuck else you wanted to talk about.
Well, so the answer to that would depend on why we were cutting the check, right? So if you're believing the party line, we're cutting that check because it's the right thing to do. Because Israel is our ally. They're our friend, our strong partner in the Middle East. And they, you know, they're on the right side of history and we want to stand with them.
I don't have to pay my friends.
No, but if your friends needed money to defend themselves from bad people, would you provide it?
Yeah, I got your back, man.
Yeah. So, now, if you, on the other hand, believe that we prop up Israeli apartheid to provide a counterbalance to the Islamic world in general, and normally to the Saudis and the Iranians, but right now just to the Iranians. If you believe that is why we're cutting them the check, then no, we shouldn't stop cutting them the check. Because that, we shouldn't stop cutting them the check just for this. right? We should offer them the opportunity to reform their ways before we fuck up what is a strategically beneficial relationship. If you believe that A, that's the reason we're cutting the check, and B, the relationship is beneficial.
That yeah. would be. I was basically just asking a question about like poking the bear. Cause I mean, like, of course we're not going to do it, but I mean, we at least fucking threaten it. At least bring it up.
No, that's not necessarily true. Right. That's part of why you even have organizations like AIPAC, right? The much maligned Israeli lobbying group, Jewish American lobbying group, really, that lobbies on behalf of Israel in the United States with the United States government and the state governments around the U.S. as well. Even they have said, dude, don't do this. This is a terrible, terrible idea. Don't please don't do this. Look, making a move like this has to be predicated in part on the sincere belief that you will never lose another election and that your allies will never lose another election either. Right? Because you are poking the bear here a little bit. And eventually, the Democrats will hold both houses of Congress again and probably the presidency as well. And if you continue to poke the bear, you set yourself up for a situation where the United States could reasonably go, hey, you know what? I mean, like, we're cool giving you enough stuff to make sure that you don't get overrun by your neighbors, but I think we're going to pull back on giving you as much stuff. Right? And that's bad news for the Israeli people. And the Israeli people aren't necessarily down with what Benjamin Netanyahu and his government are doing. You know, I mean, so it's, yeah, man, it's a tricky situation about whether we should continue giving them money under these circumstances or not. I'm inclined to say that we should actually reduce the amount that we send to Israel in retaliation for this, because yeah, it's not cool. You don't fuck with the people who are giving you charity.
Well, I mean, it's not that far out of what Donald Trump has said about many other countries about how we're giving them tons of money and we're getting nothing in return. So I think that Israel and Saudi Arabia are about the only two that hasn't said anything like that about.
Yeah. So the real problem here isn't necessarily what the Israelis did. What the Israelis did was stupid and short-sighted. What Donald Trump did was incredibly dangerous. You don't do this as a political candidate in the United States. You don't reach out to a foreign power and ask them to punish your political adversaries. You don't involve a foreign power in creating optics for an upcoming election. You don't do this. This is one of the ways that a budding dictator undermines democracy. This has been a consistent theme of this show for the last year, and I'm still on about it. We're not talking about a normal person here. We're not talking about someone who is just going to go away politely when he is beaten at the ballot box in 2020. We're talking about someone who, if he can, will seize indefinite power in the United States.
Hey, and Netanyahu's up for election here pretty soon, right?
Yeah, and he has made rumblings to that effect himself, that he may not leave quietly if he is turned out.
Hey, you know who's going to have to leave? So this just came out today that the White House Trump administration is now saying that diplomats and UN officials, they're halting the visas for their same-sex partners unless they get married. And then a lot of these people, once again, diplomats and UN officials, not all countries are quite as cool as us. There are a lot of countries that are a lot fucking cooler than us, but you know, as far as these kinds of things go. But yeah, so if you're in a same-sex relationship and your spouse, oh, sorry, it's not your spouse, so they need to get the fuck out.
Reading through the article on this, a representative for the State Department indicated that they would be happy to work with anyone who comes from a country where they might face repercussions at home as a result of this. That means that we can interpret this in only one of two ways, right? Either A, that person from the State Department is sincere, and we really will work with anyone who needs an exception to this new rule. That means that the entire thing was a cynical ploy to score political points at the expense of gay people in the United States and around the world. It produces no discernible benefit to anyone and doesn't produce any material harm either, except for offering gay people up as, yet again, red meat for his base. The other way that the alternative is that that person from the State Department is insincere. This is a genuine effort to discriminate against gay people. And they will, in fact, enforce these rules. And in some cases, leave foreign diplomats with a choice between their career and being put to death when they get back home. Good people don't do this.
And I would like to attack this from a different side, which is this. Hey, I've been with my fiance, Andrea. Guess what? We're never getting married. I just still call her my fiance. And I don't think that that means that I love her any less than any of you that are married to somebody love your spouse. Just because we don't want to get the government involved and we don't think that that's the sexiest thing you can do is get a piece of paper from the government doesn't mean we don't love each other any more or any less than anybody else. And that goes for whatever gender you are into and whoever you want to be with. That piece of paper doesn't enhance your relationship at all.
Nope, not even a little bit. To be honest, the government just shouldn't be involved in marriages, period. It's really frustrating, man. The thing that's most frustrating for me at this point isn't that he continues to do these things. It's that his supporters either ignore the fact that he didn't believe any of this 4 years ago or don't care. Right? They either have convinced themselves that he always believed this stuff and is a true believer like them, or they know they're being used, but they don't give a shit because he's temporarily winning.
Everybody likes a winner.
That doesn't say good things about his base. And this circles back to the anti-reality article we were talking about earlier. And it comes back to a theme that we've talked about on this show before. When this is all over, we have to live with each other again. Right? And we have to figure out a way to make that work so we don't ever end up back here ever again. And in the past, I was super frustrated because I couldn't think of how we do that. I think we have a way to get started. We've already talked about it tonight, and it's we need to support the antitrust investigations into big tech. And we need to find out how we can restructure that industry so they no longer have the power to shape our reality.
And you know, that would be a really great place to end this podcast, but I think we need a little levity to bring this up. And I would just like to once again say, I'm not ignoring the attacks on healthcare and saying that these shootings, we don't need background checks. We don't need anything because it's all a slippery slope. I'm not forgetting about that. I'm not forgetting about, hey, but it's a mental problem. That's why we're having all these mass shootings. It's a mental problem. By the way, I'm not going to do anything about it, and I'm going to try to take healthcare away from people. We're going to leave all that shit. I understand that because I do think this is a distraction, but so Donald Trump's not going to meet with the leader of Denmark because they won't talk about selling Greenland to us.
Oh, holy shit. It's fucking, this blew my mind, man. Like, actually, no, it didn't. It didn't blow my mind. I laughed really hard when I read it, but it actually didn't surprise me at all when you look at his behavior and the way he has described the world as he sees it. And it's interesting, right? Because it gives some indication, by the way, that this is not a George W. Bush style act. Like, remember, George W. Bush and his family came from fucking Kennebunkport, right? He was Texan by proxy, but he turned into a real goddamn yokel when it served his political purposes. But in the end, the guy wasn't as dumb as he played himself off as being. I think Donald Trump really is this stupid. I don't think he understands that the only way that things like the Louisiana Purchase were possible, right, was because that land was owned by an individual, the King of France, right? Like, you can't sell part of a democracy like this. It doesn't work that way.
But we're trying. We're fucking trying.
Yeah. It's God damn it, it would be hilarious if it wasn't so sad. So very sad. But it was hilarious to watch them laugh their asses off at him and be like, really? I mean, honestly?
I thought this was a complete fucking joke until it came out today that he's not going to meet with the prime minister, I believe it's prime minister, of Denmark over this shit. I thought that it was going to come out that he's like, you know, we say some weird shit sometimes. And I was like, oh, you can buy a country? Hell yeah. How much should you buy a country? I'd totally like to buy a country. And then people go, dude, you can't buy a country. You're like, I kind of figured you couldn't buy a country because I don't remember the last time anybody bought a country. I mean, Russia kind of took over Crimea. By the way, Trump thinks that they should be back in the G8, Russia, who got booted. Did they give Crimea back?
No. He thought that the second they got booted out, Mark. He's just now bringing it back up again.
Yeah. Anyway, we're not moving. We're not talking about that. We're laughing at Donald Trump trying to buy Greenland, or we're ending a podcast.
End it on this. For a moment, imagine for yourself how profoundly fucking stupid this man must be. We are running record deficits in this country. We have no money to make a large capital acquisition. Even if Denmark was willing to sell us Greenland, we can't fucking afford it. You have any idea how much Greenland would fucking cost? It would be trillions. We don't have trillions of dollars to pay Denmark.
But we can borrow it from China.
They don't have it to lend to us. Like,
how do you just figure out how much a goddamn country costs?
You don't, because it's a fucking preposterous question.
Boom.
There you go. That's the right place to end it, right there.
There we go. Thank you guys very much for tuning in to a new episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. I have been your host, Mark LaRue. He is Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD. You can interact with us at Plastic Cup Pod on all your favorite social media sites. However you found this, hit subscribe, and we have this much fun on a weekly basis. 98% of the time.
Buy Seedlip. Seriously, even if you add booze to it later, this is some fucking good shit. It was really nice. I thoroughly enjoyed this.
And to Mike over at Park Plaza Liquor, who we had a long discussion months ago about why the hell would people buy boozeless booze? Now I know the answer, man. I'm glad it exists. And I'm glad that you exist. And I'm glad that everybody listening to this exists. Do something positive in your life in this week. All right, guys?
Heck yeah. I'm on board.
Talk to you next week. Whoa, 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 whoa. It's just a